a gift to gather with your people near and far, to sing your praises, to feast at your table, to hear your word together. This morning, God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing to you. O Lord, our God, our rock, and our Redeemer. Amen. So if you've been with us a while, you know, and for those who are perhaps just joining us, I have a general affinity for the Gospels. When it comes to preaching material, I lean heavily into the stories of Jesus as told in Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. And honestly, from there, it probably goes Old Testament. And then finally, if just nothing is clicking, I'll glance at the epistle lesson for the day. Those letters to the church, many of which are attributed to Paul. I suppose I resonate with that book that came out a few years ago titled, Jesus I Have Loved, but Paul? Today is different. I mean, we have a great gospel lesson, feeding of the 5,000. There's so much that could be said. We could talk about how we, like the disciples, sometimes get stuck in a mindset of scarcity and how that devolves into relationships that are marked more by competition and comparison, perhaps even fear. But Jesus was operating from and living out of a very different kind of place, a different kind of rootedness. And all of his life is about inviting us into that same rootedness, into a way of life marked by love and abundance and grace. And yet, here I am, focusing on the Ephesians text, these words from Paul, a prayer, really, for the community of Jesus' followers at Ephesus. But you see, I think this prayer from Paul actually invites us to consider something foundational about who we are, something Jesus, through his words and actions, his life, was helping us to see and understand and embrace and live into, to be transformed, to be made new, perhaps to return home to what is most true about us. My response, Paul writes to the church, is to get down on my knees before the Father, this magnificent Father who parcels out all heaven and earth. I ask him to strengthen you by his Spirit, not a brute strength, but a glorious inner strength, that Christ will live in you as you open the door and invite him in. And I ask him that with both feet planted firmly in love, you'll be able to take in with all followers of Jesus the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love. Reach out and experience the breadth, test its length, plumb the heights, plumb the depths, rise to the heights. Live full lives, full in the fullness of God. It's the Message translation, and we don't use that a lot here, but I love the poetry of it for today. The extravagant dimensions of Christ's love. Live full lives, full in the fullness of God. Reach out and experience the breadth, rise to the heights. It's so grand and lovely. And of course, the temptation for me is to get stuck in the emotionalism of it, how it makes me feel in the moment. But I think this is so much more than a Hallmark greeting card from Paul to the church. You see, I've been thinking a lot about this idea of living full lives, full in the fullness of God, with both feet planted firmly in love. Because if I'm honest, it feels like an invitation to do something a little paradoxical. And I think it feels like a paradox because in so many ways, we are formed in a culture that defines what it means to live full lives in a very particular kind of way. I mean, if we took a moment and sat in circles and reflected on questions like, what are we taught are the markers of a full life? Or what do our actions and decisions, how we spend our time, What do these things suggest that we believe are the markers of a full life? And I think if we took a moment and could reflect a little bit courageously and honestly together, I wonder if we would land at somewhat similar places. And I suppose it goes to something I've been wrestling with a lot these days. But how in our cultural context, 21st century American context, we have a very particular way of defining or determining what makes a full life. And how we define a full life might actually hinder our capacity to live full in the fullness of God. The trappings of how we define a full life might actually get in the way of our ability to live with both feet planted firmly on love. I actually think that's at least part of what's playing out in our gospel lesson this morning. The disciples were trapped in a very particular kind of mindset. We might call it scarcity. But they could not imagine how there could ever be enough to feed all of these people. How are we going to do this, Jesus? You have to send them off. But Jesus, with both feet planted firmly on love, saw the events unfolding, the crowds gathering through a totally different lens. And so much of what he taught and lived was about helping the disciples, helping all of us, really, to be free, to be transformed, to be rooted differently, to be planted firmly on love so that they were able to live from a place of abundance and generosity, creativity, and imagination. Earlier this week, I came across this quote from the Sufi mystic Rumi. Why, when God's world is so big, did you fall asleep in a prison of all places? Why, when God's world is so big, did you fall asleep in a prison of all places? And in some ways, these thoughts this morning are conversational because I'm really curious how that lands for you. But for me, I wonder if the way that we have come to understand and define a full life hinders our capacity to live full in the fullness of God. It has become like a prison that in many ways we have fallen asleep in. I think this is what makes Paul's words paradoxical for me. Because to live full lives with both feet planted firmly on love, the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love, to reach out and experience the breadth, test its length, plumb the depths, rise to the heights, to live full lives is ultimately, I think, to be transformed. It is a shift for us. In our hearts and in our minds, in our consciousness. It is paradoxical because to live full lives in the fullness of God is to, as one person put it, chisel away the stuff we smother our lives with and then return home. Home to our true selves and rest once again in that God-centered love already deep within you and me. You see, Paul's prayer, and really Paul with his Damascus Road conversion, his transformation from persecutor of the early church to its main protagonist, I think Paul is intimately positioned to understand our need to return home. And so Paul's prayer is really a prayer for all of us to be free, to be firmly planted in the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love that makes each one of us unique and distinct. That God-centered love which holds us together moment to moment and constantly creates us anew. And you see, I believe it is here, as we return home to ourselves, as we once again begin to plant both feet firmly on love, that we begin to notice that same love flowing through the faces and lives of one another. And when that shift begins to happen, everything changes. We no longer need to fear one another. We no longer need to compare and compete with one another, but can live courageously together into God's good future. Love is life, Sister Ilia Delio once wrote. And the fullness of love is the fullness of life. I ask that with both feet planted firmly on love, you'll be able to take in with all the followers of Jesus the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love. Reach out and experience the breadth. Test its length, plumb the depths, rise to the heights. Live full lives, full in the fullness of God. Amen.